Pickering Review prints Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast, recorded in the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @QNReview, that is @CUENDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@qnreview.com. That is information @CUENDREVIEW.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
Evening Times, October 19. Opinion. George Redmond, Labour Party councillor in the Carlton ward, says council tax announcement will end in misery for citizens. I suppose I should not have been surprised at any of the SNP's desperate attempts to win some votes. But Humza Yousaf's phrase on council tax this week is beyond the pale. Council tax, for all its unpopularity, is the lifeblood of local services. A phrase, while sounding sweet to the average homeowner, has bitter consequences. It is a gimmick that might score points with voters, but leaves councils scrambling to fill the financial void. This is not about easing the burden on the public. This is a brazen political move that seems more geared towards courting votes rather than delivering genuine financial relief or improving the lives of Scots. The SNP under Yousaf's leadership appears to have disregarded the very essence of local governance in a move that has had even their meek coalition partners, the Greens, questioning it. Local authorities, not Holyrood, are best placed to understand and cater to the unique needs of their communities. They should have the financial autonomy to set rates in line with those needs. By imposing this freeze, the SNP are trampling over local governance, undermining the powers of local councils, and jeopardising vital services. I could not help but raise an eyebrow at the sheer audacity of making such a sweeping announcement without prior consultation with COSLA. For a party that champions the cause of Scottish independence and self-determination, their disrespect for local governance is nothing short of hypocritical. COSLA, the body that represents Scotland's councils, plays a crucial role in ensuring local services are funded appropriately. It is the voice of local governance, and by sidelining it in this decision, Yousaf and the SNP are sending a clear message. Local concerns are secondary to their political agenda. Furthermore, where is this money coming from? Are we to believe that there's a magical pot of gold in Holyrood that can cover this shortfall? Glasgow's finances have been cut to the bone already by the Scottish Government since 2007. Are we now to believe it will give us a fair deal for our city? And while the promise of no increase in council tax might sound enticing to many, it is essential to understand what this really means. Think about the litter that might not get picked up, the community centres that might need to close, the support workers who might be made redundant. These are real consequences for real people. Let's also remember that council tax is not just a revenue source. It is a tool that allows local authorities to address local disparities and ensure the needs of their community are met. We should all be wary of such grandstanding announcements. While they might make for a good headline, the devil is always in the details. And as we delve deeper into this decision, it becomes evident that this is less about helping the people and more about furthering the SNP's political ambitions. The Scottish people deserve transparency. They deserve to know where the funds are coming from. And they deserve a government that respects local authority. We can only hope that in the coming days, Yusuf and his team will provide the clarity and reassurances that the public so desperately needs. In the meantime, we must continue to ask the hard questions. After all, it's not just our money at stake. It's the very fabric of our local communities and the city, says George Redmond, Labour Party councillor in the Carlton ward. Evening Times, October 20. Stuart Patterson asks, Humza Yousaf's council tax freeze, a blessing or a curse? Council tax is again this week a hot political issue. Humza Yousaf, the First Minister, announced that bills would be frozen next year. There was already a freeze in place previously from 2007 that lasted for 10 years. In Glasgow, it was 1 year longer, as the then Labour-run council under Stephen Purcell put in place a freeze in 2006. The idea was that the Scottish Government compensated for any rise and gave councils a share of a dedicated pot of cash if they agreed not to impose a rise. A similar type of deal is being talked about for next year. Over that same period, however, council budgets were cut dramatically. In Glasgow, year after year, city treasurers of Labour, then the SNP, have worked with officials in the finance department to come up with balanced budgets that meant cuts totalling hundreds of millions of pounds over a decade or so. Far and away, the biggest contribution to the council budget is what it gets from the government, so household bills will be frozen. The First Minister's announcement will be welcomed by many people who are already struggling with increased rent and rising mortgage rates, gas and electric bills, shopping that seems to go up with every trip to the supermarket, and rising costs of petrol and insurance for those who run a car. But are there other implications? Financial experts have estimated that councils, even if they jacked up council tax by 5% next year, would still be facing a massive shortfall that would require difficult cuts. If the suggested 3% funding figure turns out to be the case, then any council that was planning on raising council tax by more than that will lose out. Last year, Glasgow increased its tax by 5%. The bottom line is simple. Either councils are given or raise enough money to fund the services that they deliver, or those services get cut. And we are at the point where if cuts are going to continue to be required, then it seems reasonable to expect some services will be axed altogether. The Scottish Government says it has funded local government with an extra £376 million last year, or 3% more. Even so, councils still had to make service cuts of millions of pounds. There are, as with any policy announcement on tax, questions about the motivations of the decision. Is it a political strategy designed to bolster support for a new First Minister and a party that has recently lost a crucial by-election ahead of a general election year? Or is it a genuine attempt by a new First Minister to recognise the cost of living crisis and freeze one of the few bills his government has some power over. The announcement has similarities with 2007, when John Swinney announced the first freeze. It was initially to be a stopgap before the council tax was supposed to be replaced with a local income tax, and then was continued in response to households feeling the squeeze after the recession following the financial crash. If it is a political move, then who benefits most? Households in the higher bands E to H stand to gain the most. They were expecting to be hit with a bigger rise next year, from 12% up to 22.5%. So the top band will save £750 a year now that the idea has been scrapped. At the other end, while any saving is welcome, many, but not all people in the lowest bands already get a council tax reduction. So it is argued it benefits people on middle and higher incomes more than lower earnings. The timing of the latest announcement has raised questions. It was revealed at a party conference and just days after a top-level party summit to dissect the by-election defeat. On the one hand, many households will breathe a sigh of relief that at least one bill will not go up next April. On the other, unless it is funded sufficiently, it could leave councils with yet another gap to plug, and the same people spared the rise could see an increase in other charges or a cut in services they either enjoy or depend on. One way or another, council services need to be paid for, and one way or another, it is the people who will pay for them, says Stuart Patterson, political correspondent. Evening Times, October 19. Lifestyle. Glasgow composer of Love Actually to release new version. Report by Rebecca Newlands. A Glasgow composer will release a new, fuller version of the iconic Love Actually soundtrack he scored two decades ago. Craig Armstrong composed the cues for the hit 2003 Richard Curtis romantic comedy, starring an ensemble cast including Alan Rickman, Bill Nighy, Emma Thompson, Hugh Grant, and Colin Firth. The BAFTA and Grammy-winning composer has an impressive catalogue of film scores, including The Great Gatsby, Moulin Rouge, Elizabeth, The Golden Age, Far From the Madding Crowd, Snowden, and Ray. The songs which came together in this Glasgow studio would become a central part of the film's enduring success and appeal, and now Armstrong has returned to them to deliver a new project. Love Actually, the love themes for orchestra, is a new album of 15 songs from the original score, which have been adapted, extended and reworked to celebrate the film's 20th anniversary. Armstrong said, "Getting the chance to work on this film 20 years ago was an exciting and sometimes complex process, as quite a few areas of the film had to be filmed on set. Of course, I had no idea at the time that this film would go on to become so loved, and it is a testament to all the crafts involved in filmmaking that led to it being the success it is today." It also brings to life Armstrong's long-held desire to release full versions of his cues, as they were often cut down due to the nature of film editing. Highlights of the new album include Croissants in France, which fans will recognise as the soundtrack to Jamie and Aurelia's love story. Glasgow love theme is heard in the famous scene in which Juliet watches her new husband's best friend Mark's recording of their wedding day, centred around his unrequited love for her. Armstrong added, of the original compositions for Love Actually, Glasgow love theme is one of my favourites. It was written here in Glasgow 20 years ago, and I'm so pleased to have had the chance to go full circle and write the extended full version as I had always imagined it. My thanks go out to all the musicians involved in making the Love Actually score so loved. The album, performed by the Budapest Art Orchestra, will be released by independent Glasgow-based CMA Records on November 24. Report by Rebecca Newlands. Evening Times, October 19. Lifestyle. I went pumpkin picking near Glasgow Airport. Report by Taylor Murray. A pumpkin picking patch just metres away from Glasgow Airport could hold the key to Halloween's decoration problems. Located just off the St James Interchange in Paisley, East Yonderton Farm opened its doors last weekend for Halloween enthusiasts. On what was a brisk Sunday morning, I got layered up to combat the cold October breeze before heading to Renfrewshire with my partner. Having booked a place in advance over the phone, we arrived at the farm just before 12 p.m. with plenty of parking places to choose from. Decorated with spooky festive gear, such as witches, cobwebs, and even a half-buried skeleton who looked like the cold got to them, the farm really did capture the Halloween mood. Upon entering the patch, a staff member with a quad bike and trailer to help with your load gave us two bags to put our selections in, along with a wheelbarrow if needed. We were spoiled with choice when it came to the sizes of the pumpkins, as we could get ones that would fit in the palm of our hand, or ones that would require a lift back to the car. And one thing that we loved to see was the selection of different colours of pumpkins. You could choose whatever tickles your fancy, whether that be the standard bright orange, or ice-cold white, or even oddly coloured green ones. In terms of prices, unlike some places we have visited at this time of year, East Yonderton Farm offers you £1.25 per kilogram, which we agreed was much fairer than going with the size of the pumpkin on a scale of small, medium and large. Felt like you were getting more bang for your pumpkin. On the way out, or depending on the order you wanted to do it, there was an option to dig up potatoes that would be great for your dinner. Also, beside the potato farm, were some photo opportunities with a tractor that we felt we had to take advantage of, as well as some hay bales and a scarecrow. At the pay point, we had the option to wash our pumpkins if we wished, as some wipes to clear the dirt of your shoes or boots. After picking up four pumpkins for what seemed like an hour of looking for the perfect one, the final price came just above £17, with an extra £3 added on top for a bag of 5 kilogram for some pre-picked potatoes and £2 for parking, totalling £22. For a place so close to the airport and 15 minutes away from Glasgow city centre and easily accessible, It was an experience that was really enjoyable, and we would be eager to return again before Halloween is out, says Taylor Murray. Evening Times, October 19. Lifestyle. Why six warships will arrive in Glasgow docks next week. Report by Kirsty Feerick. Six warships will arrive in Glasgow next week as the city hosts part of a major military exercise. Exercise Joint Warrior will see vessels from Belgium, Holland, Germany and Poland arrive at King George V docks to train together in a safe but realistic environment. The scenario of the exercise will mirror a broad range of crisis and conflict situations which could realistically be experienced in real-world operations. The project will be launched on Sunday until Thursday, November 2, with several of the participating vessels departing from Glasgow. One German and one French vessel will also be stopping in at Hunterston before joining the exercise. 10 nations will take part, bringing up to 19 warships and submarines, 20 aircraft, and around 2,000 military personnel to military ranges across the country and to maritime exercise areas off the northwest coast of Scotland and the North Sea. Participating nations this time include Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Poland, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The exercise, which takes place twice a year in the spring and autumn, is designed, planned, and delivered by the Joint Tactical Exercise Planning Staff, JTEPS, at His Majesty's Naval Base, Portsmouth. A command and control centre will be set up there to monitor all exercise activity. A total of 20 aircraft will take part in the exercise, with some of them operating from RAF Lossiemouth, Prestwick Airport, previously HMS Gannet, and Stornoway Airport, Cape Roth Weapons Range, including Garvey Island in the north of Scotland, being used for joint firing activity. Mine countermeasures vessels will also be operating in Loch Ewe, Loch Gearloch, Grunard Bay, and the outer approaches to Ullapool. GPS denial operations off the west coast of Scotland, including the North Minches and Loch Ewe. The operations will be conducted at limited periods each day, and the relevant authorities, especially maritime and aviation, have been involved in the planning process and relevant safeguards have been put in place. Exercise Joint Warrior is linked directly with the NATO Military Training Exercise Programme and brings together all three UK armed forces, the Royal Navy, Army and Royal Air Force, along with other participating countries, to provide high-quality training opportunities and improve joint operations between the UK and its allies. Report by Kirsty Feerick.
From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section, Council tax freeze will be welcome if properly funded, by Stuart Patterson. The council tax freeze should be welcomed as long as this is properly funded by the government, the man in charge of Glasgow's budget said. Humza Yousaf announced the freeze earlier this week, and Richard Bell, city treasurer, said it caught him, like others, by surprise. It means next year we won't have to tell council taxpayers in Glasgow they need to fork out more, which he said people will be glad of. However, he struck a note of caution that once the details are ironed out, it must mean it is properly fully funded and doesn't leave the council short to change the following year. Councillor Bell told the Glasgow Times, Is it all the money to cover whatever council tax rise we thought we would have? Is it a one-off payment, or will it be included every year? He explained if it is a one-off, never to be repeated, payment, then it only means a cut the following year, when the cash goes back to what it was. He added, then, it depends on how much is the settlement. Will the Scottish Government just balance it by giving less money to the local government settlement? If it is funded, I don't understand the objections. He said it is now for him and local government colleagues to ensure they get the right deal. He added, it is now up to us to have serious discussions with the government. Bell, who has been treasurer in Glasgow since 2020, has had to deal with budget deficits leading to tens of millions of pounds of cuts. Councils, he said, needed to accept the realpolitik of the situation and recognise the cost of living crisis is of greater importance to the public right now than the political dynamics between local and national government. He added, if someone is saying don't put up the council tax and we give you the money, I'm not going to shut the door in their face. Most folk will think it's at least the council tax isn't going up. They don't care about the details of the Verity House agreement. Bell said, Humza Yousaf has listened to people on the cost of living and the Rutherglen Hamilton West by-election had a part to play. He has responded to that. We can argue about the process, but this can't be about principle or damaged egos. He said the freeze is an opportunity to reform council tax and put in place a fairer system. A previous freeze that lasted 10 years was intended to allow for the council tax to be scrapped in line with an SNP manifesto commitment. The city's finance chief said this must be seen as an opportunity to finally reform the tax to make it fairer. He said, no one likes a council tax. We have been saying to the First Minister, let's get a benefit from this. The freeze is an opportunity to iron out these problems. We have to grasp the nettle with the council tax. And that report was by Stuart Patterson. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October 2023, from a news section, ex-squaddy was involved in drug serious organised crime operation. This article is unattributed. A former squaddy was involved in a drugs and dirty money serious organised crime operation. Dean Bell, 35, was snared after an encrypted phone network was breached by police. Bell discussed the purchase and movement of drugs with other members of an organised crime group. He also threatened to assault one of the associates' parents if they asked to the police after they were caught. Bell pleaded guilty on Friday at the High Court in Glasgow to being involved in serious organised crime. The charges span between September 2019 and June 2020. The court heard that Bell was a member of a serious organised crime group responsible for supplying kilos of drugs through Scotland. This included to an organised crime group in Dundee, where Bell associated with convicted drugs trafficker George McLean. Bell, of Cryston, North Lanarkshire, arranged with McLean to have 997 grams of cocaine delivered to an address in Dundee. Prosecutor Paul Kearney, KC, said, the item recovered was of such a weight and value that this could only have been for an onward supply and not personal use. This was valued at £50,000. £12,040 in cash was recovered from a motor vehicle that McLean was driving when he was detained in October 2019 on the way back from the drugs drop-off. A warrant for Bell's home was granted and officers recovered £700 in cash as well as two encrypted phones. Pava spray was also found inside a Volkswagen Caddy vehicle parked at the property. Packaging with traces of heroin were also found within the vehicle. A number of messages from the encrypted phones were read out which discussed purchase, preparation and supply of drugs, as well as the distribution and collection of money. Bell was noted to discuss sourcing and distribution of multi-kilos of heroin and cocaine, as well as large quantities of amphetamine tablets, and cannabis. Bell, using the screen name Olive Scalp, was in contact with a number of associates with encrypted devices. He was seen to discuss sourcing 250 grams of cocaine as well as 1.5 kilos of heroin with an associate with the screen name Touchy Human. The pair also spoke about collecting £9,000 cash, as well as an outstanding bill for benzodiazepine tablets. An associate was stopped in a van on March 17, 2020 by police officers with cocaine, street valium and £24,540 cash inside. Bell discussed the arrest with Touchy Human, stating, "NC, expletive deleted, that Grassies is getting chopped to F, expletive deleted. Tell him mouth shut and tell him what happens. It is what is man up and take it in the chin. It's only money, nothing serious, but they need to watch, they will come 100%. Tell him he mentions my name, I will maim him for life and slash his man da." John Scullion, KC, defending, told the court that Bell had managed to leave the crime group for employment before being caught. He said, "He served in the army for a number of years and has a significant employment history. He became involved in the organised crime group, which resulted in these offences. These matters were uncovered following from analysis of the data recovered during Operation Kinetic, which is why the dates are of some age." Sentence was deferred pending background reports until next month by Judge Lord Armstrong, who remanded Bell in custody meantime. And that article was by a court reporter. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section. Family of hit-and-run victims saddened by killer's short jail term. Article by Lauren Brownlee and Dave Finlay. The devastated family of a man who died after a hit-and-run in Glasgow has revealed they are saddened by the punishment handed to his killer. We previously reported that learner driver Ali Zafar struck Derek Blackshaw, 46, at a Morrison's car park in Cardonald on October 1st, 2021, when he was aged 17. Now 19, Zafar was sentenced to 4 years in jail at the High Court in Edinburgh today. Judge John McCormick told him he would have faced a 6-year jail term, but it would be reduced to take account of his guilty plea. The judge banned Zafar for driving from 8 years and ordered that he must pass an extended test before holding a driving licence in future. A statement from Mr. Blackshaw's family, released through lawyers Digby Brown, said, "While no sentence could ever reflect the loss of Derek or our pain, we still feel saddened by the final outcome and the relatively short length of time that the driver will likely spend behind bars. Derek was wholesome, honourable and adored, and the loss of such a man is felt by more than his family and friends. It is also felt by the wider community, which is enhanced through his work, time and desire to help others. Any bereaved family who has endured the criminal justice system will tell you there is no such thing as closure. There is only an end to paperwork and proceedings. So, our only comfort is the knowledge that this painful process has stopped and we can now move forward with the same dignity and strength as Derek would have done." In court on Friday, the judge said no sentence would reflect the loss or grief suffered by Mr. Blackshaw's family. He told Zafar that a custodial sentence was required and added, "It is necessary to punish you, to seek to deter you and others from driving in such a dangerous manner and, of course, to protect the public." The judge pointed out that the aggregating features included Zafar of Calf Hill Road driving at speed in the car park and failing to stop to alert the authorities after the collision. He held a professional licence at the time and was travelling at an average speed of 32 miles per hour. Mr. Blackshaw had attended the funeral of a family friend earlier in the day and, after visiting a snooker club, was taking a shortcut home when he was struck and killed. Zafar said to a passenger in the car that he had just hit a guy before driving away from the scene. The court previously heard that the teenager had asked if he could borrow a colleague's car keys to listen to music in the vehicle. Mooney Niamh agreed on the condition that he did not move the car, but Zafar drove along Paisley Road West before turning into the car park. After the incident, he drove back to a takeaway and told the owner of the car what had occurred. He also told them not to contact the emergency services. Mr. Niamh thought it was a joke at first until he saw the damage to the vehicle. He contacted 999 before going to the scene and attempting CPR on the victim. Defence Counsel Duncan McPhee said the first offender in Zafar was remorseful and wished to apologise to the bereaved family. He lodged a letter with the court from the mosque Zafar attended and said the teenager did charity work. And that article was by Lauren Brownlee and Dave Finlay. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section, Glasgow Church faces closure due to a period of change. Article by Nicole Mitchell. A Southside church faces closure in 2027 as the Church of Scotland goes through a monumental period of change. St James Pollock Parish Church could be sold as the Presbytery of Glasgow refused the ownership of its buildings due to fewer resources. Reverend Dr Grant Barclay, Presbytery Clerk of the Presbytery of Glasgow, says while the intention is to release the building, there are no imminent plans to close the church, which is located in Micklerigg Crescent. He said, the church is currently going through a monumental period of change as it works out how best to share the good news of Jesus Christ with fewer resources. As such, the Presbytery of Glasgow, along with all others in Scotland, is currently reviewing the ownership of its buildings. In the recently approved Presbytery of Glasgow mission plan, the intention is that the St James Pollock Parish Church building would be released some years from now, in 2027. However, there are no imminent plans to close St James Pollock Parish Church. The St James Pollock Parish Church building was originally built as Titwood Parish Church between 1893 and 1895, and was located in Glencairn Drive, Pollock Shields. It was dismantled and rebuilt on Micklerigg Crescent in Pollock between 1951 and 1953 and renamed St James. It opened its doors at its current site on September 3, 1953. Would you be affected by the closure of St James Pollock Parish Church? Email nicole.mitchell@newsquest.co.uk. And the article was by Nicole Mitchell. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section, Glasgow woman fears for husband trapped in war-torn Gaza. Article by Stuart Patterson. A woman has issued a plea to the UK government to help get her husband out of Gaza. Jola Al-Jakbir from Bayliston is terrified for her husband Yunus, who has been trapped in Gaza. He travelled to visit his parents, brothers and sisters and their families, including young nieces and nephews, some of whom he had not yet met. But he has been unable to get out following the siege by Israel after the Hamas attack last weekend. Jola, 39, said, "All we can do right now is sit and wait." She said every day she prays Yunus is still alive. Yunus, 26, who works for a vehicle firm in the city, went last month to visit his family who he had not seen in more than 6 years. Now, his wife waits at home in Glasgow, hoping every day is the day he gets to return, and she is checking daily that he is still alive. Jola said, "He went there to visit the family and was supposed to be back a week ago, but it isn't happening. I'm appealing for everyone to try and help me and my husband to get him out." The UK government has not much responded. I have had great support from Hamza Yousaf and my MP. "We have to push our government in order to get our British residents and Scottish residents out of Gaza as soon as possible. We might not save all of Gaza, but at least let's save our families." Jola said she has little information as Gaza has been cut off and wants the UK to help people leave like they did with flights from Israel. She said, "As the UK government evacuated British residents from Israel, they left our loved ones behind in a perilous situation, a situation that has left us in a state of constant worry and fear. For days, we, along with other families in Glasgow, including Scottish First Minister Hamza Yousaf, whose family is also stuck in Gaza, have been calling for government attention, hoping for answers, and seeking support for the safe evacuation of our family members. We wake up every morning, checking the civil register, praying our loved ones are still alive amidst the chaos and uncertainty that is Gaza. We are left in the dark, relying on unofficial sources like Telegram to find out what is happening in the war-torn Gaza Strip. Israel has severed all essential services to Gaza, leaving our family members cut off from the world, hungry and scared, adding to the urgency of our plea. And that article was by Stuart Patterson. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section, hundreds of Scottish water workers vote to strike over pay dispute. Article by Lauren Brownlee. Hundreds of Scottish water workers have voted for strike action in a dispute over pay. 78% of Unison's 1,100 members voted in favour of the industrial action. The union claims the publicly owned utility is tying their cost of living pay offer to a new pay and grading structure, and that the bosses have been withholding information from trade unions. Emma Phillips, Unison regional organiser, said, "It seems that Scottish Government's fair work and equality commitments don't matter in our biggest and most precious public asset. There is a feeling amongst members that Scottish Water bosses are behaving like Victorian mill owners, and this overwhelming vote for strike action is a reflection of how staff feel they are being treated. We met with ACAS on October 16th in an attempt to resolve matters. Unfortunately, there was no positive progress made. We remain committed to resolving this dispute and have a further meeting earlier next week. However, we are clear this is make or break. Unison and the other unions want to negotiate a new pay and grading structure with Scottish Water, but this is a complex process that relies on accurate data. It is not going to be resolved quickly, and these discussions need to be separated from any cost of living pay offer. The key workers at Scottish Water need their overdue cost of living pay rise now. Scottish Water has been contacted for comment," and that article was written by Lauren Brownlee. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 20th of October, from the news section, investigation launched after Glasgow East End home break-in. Report by Taylor Murray. An investigation has been launched by police after a break-in at a home in Glasgow's East End. Officers attended a property on Meadow Park Street in Denniston on Thursday evening around 5:45 p.m. after report of a break-in. It is not known the extent of the break-in or if there were any connections to the incident. However, inquiries are ongoing by the force. When contacted for comment, a spokesperson from Police Scotland said, "Police were called around 5:45 p.m. on Thursday 19th of October to a report of a break-in in Meadow Park Street. Inquiries are ongoing." And that report was by Taylor Murray.
This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday the 23rd of October 2023, from the news section. Charity founder not fazed by enormous £300,000 task of restoring hall. This exclusive article is written by Tom Grant. The founder of an old Kilpatrick food bank admits she was left in stunned silence when she realised just how big the job of redeveloping the Napier Hall is. Maureen Cummings and her old Kilpatrick food parcels, OKFP charity, took lease of the ageing building on October the 1st, with plans to relocate her community hub on Station Road there, and then open it up to locals once she had spent some time modernising it. But she insists she wasn't ready for what she claims she discovered when she entered the hall with rotting walls, unsafe electric wiring, damp and unkempt toilets, just some of the problems she encountered. Now Maureen explained she isn't fazed by the task at hand and revealed work has already begun to bring the building into the 21st century. Speaking to the Glasgow Times, she said, "When we submitted our bid to lease the Napier Hall, we knew there would be a lot of work involved. However, it was not until we took possession of the keys on October the 1st that we realised the enormity of the job ahead." There was a stunned silence as our management committee walked from room to room, seeing firsthand the overall condition of the building. "We could not have ever imagined it to be in such a poor state of repair. However, it did not faze us. I'm now project managing the site and the multiple trades that are helping us to rebuild this fantastic building. Every day brings its challenges, of course, but there is progress at the end of each shift. Maureen and her volunteers plan to continue the work of helping the most vulnerable in the community with food, toiletries and social events, just as she's been doing at Station Road since she started the group in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. However, with early estimates quoting around £300,000 to restore and upgrade the original building, together with a planned extension of OKFP's HQ, Maureen explained she is committed to restoring the Napier Hall to its former glory, with funding applications submitted and several investors already secured and committed to the exciting project. Maureen finished, "The team of contractors, funders, investors, volunteers and staff we have are totally committed to restoring our community hall. It's time to put a lot of TLC back into a building that has given so many memories to local families over the years." That article was written by Tom Grant. This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday, the 23rd of October, 2023, from the news section. Glasgow parents plead with council for safer school transport. This exclusive article is written by Marissa McWhirter. A long and dangerous walk to school has prompted a group of determined parents to campaign for safer transport for their children. Rob Royston, youngsters, joined in with parents at an organised walk from the local Asda to Catchment School, Smithycroft Secondary, on Thursday, that's October the 19th, night. Snaking along busy roads and poorly lit streets, this trek takes over an hour and includes cutting through a hazardous graveyard and crossing several risky crossings. One prospective Smithycroft student who took part in the walk, which left the supermarket around 6 p.m, said that she didn't feel safe and was worried the long distance to and from school would leave her tired and impact her learning. Alana Muir, a mum whose son will be going to Smithycroft, claimed the only suitable bus was the First Bus 8 service, which is often too full to pick up passengers during the early morning rush hour, as hundreds of pupils head to school. The NHS nurse added, "The buses are overflowing. There's one number 8 bus that goes to Smithycroft. It's used by people that are going to the forge or to work. It's not just for the kids, it's for the community. It's mobbed because all the children are trying to get on this bus and there's just no room. We have to take a stance. For students to walk the shortest distance, they must pass through Ridgery Park Cemetery, which is poorly lit and precarious. At the gates of the cemetery is a health and safety notice, warning the public that memorials have the potential to cause harm due to their size, weight and condition. The sign also warns parents that children should be accompanied by an adult when entering the cemetery. The spokesperson for the council said that road safety officers had walked several routes from various addresses to assess the options and deemed them all suitable. They added, "However, it is ultimately a parent or carer's decision if they want to accompany their child to and from secondary school." Alana said, "We have to make sure our kids are safe because the safety of our children is our top priority. None of us have an issue with Smithycroft itself, it's just how these kids are going to get there. We've been asking the council and they keep coming back with the same answer, that it's safe for the kids to walk. We're talking about 11-year-old kids that are going into first year. I feel unsafe walking around the route myself. Is it going to take a child to get hurt for something to be done?" During the organised school walk, the cemetery was flooded and the families were forced to take a longer diversion. Several junctions encountered by the group were populated by speeding cars and poor visibility. Ashley McNally, another concerned parent on the walk, said the distance from her home to Glendale Estate to Smithycroft was 2.4 miles using the graveyard route. She said the distance her child was expected to walk daily to get to and from school every day was nearly 5 miles. Ashley added, "What I noticed on the walk was that there were 4 crossings, all of which were on and off junctions for the M8 motorway. The other crossings in this area were very slow in changing and very busy." The council is required to provide home-to-school transport via a free bus pass for distances over 2.2 miles from the catchment school, and the distance is measured by the shortest suitable walking route. Alana said, "The kids need transport from Rob Royston to Smithycroft, either by more buses coming to help take the kids, or the council should provide transport from here to school. If that's where they want the kids to go, they need to provide a service that gets them there safely." In response to the Glasgow Times request for comment, a spokesperson for the council said, "Officers across the council have been working with families who have raised these concerns, and we will continue to look at ways in which we can offer reassurance and assistance. We will also be contacting First Bus to see if they are able to use a double-decker bus to address crowding on the routes in this area, as all young people are entitled to free bus travel with their NEC pass." A spokesperson for First Glasgow said, "Our service 8 buses operate on a 30-minute frequency, and we are not aware of any issues with school students being unable to board or complaints from customers. We have also reviewed passenger data and are not aware of any problems with capacity. We will continue to monitor demand on the service and review the need for any adjustments that may be necessary." That article was written by Marissa McWhirter. This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday the 23rd of October, 2023. From the news section. Met Office issues yellow warning for ice in Lanarkshire. This article is written by Rebecca Newlands. Icy conditions are set to take over the start of the week, as a weather warning has been issued. The Met Office has issued a yellow warning for ice, affecting most of North and South Lanarkshire. This will come into effect from 9 p.m. on Sunday, October the 22nd, and last until 9 a.m. on Monday, October the 23rd. Temperatures will drop, with an average of 3 degrees. The Met Office warns we can expect some icy patches on some untreated roads, pavements and cycle paths. We must also be aware of sustaining injuries from slips and falls on icy surfaces. Tips for staying safe on ice. Icy weather can cause delays and make driving conditions dangerous. You should always plan your route, check for delays and road closures. Before you set off, check your wipers, tyres and screen wash. Pack essentials in your car, warm clothing, food, drink, blanket, torch, in-car phone charger, and make sure your phone is fully charged. It is safer not to drive in icy conditions, but if you absolutely must drive, keep yourself and others safe by looking well ahead for potential hazards and keeping your speed down. Accelerating, braking, steering and changing gear as smoothly as possible will reduce the risk of skidding on ice. Using a higher gear may be more appropriate to help grip on packed ice and helps manage engine power, making it easier to find traction. If you're walking or cycling, plan to leave the house 5 minutes earlier than normal. Not needing to rush reduces your risk of accidents, slips and falls. If you need to make a journey on foot or by bike, try to use pavements along main roads, which are likely to be less slippery. Take extra care when walking on untreated pavements and prepare for journeys by wearing footwear with a good grip. Where possible, do not cycle on untreated roads as accidents are more likely. Look out for elderly relatives or neighbours by making sure they are well, they have enough supplies in case they cannot go out, and offer to clear their paths and spread some salt. That article was written by Rebecca Newlands. This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday the 23rd of October, 2023, from the news section. NHS Glasgow take major step with new fleet of vehicles. This article is written by Kirsty Feerick. NHS Glasgow have taken a major step forward with their new fleet of vehicles. The Health Board is celebrating the arrival of NHS Scotland's first fully electric 16.7-ton truck and full fleet of electric smart cars. The truck, a Volvo FL Electric, is the first of its kind to be used by any health board in Scotland and is one of two joining the NHS GGC fleet. Alongside the delivery of the 17 smart e-cars, it represents an investment of more than £760,000 in green transport and marks a significant milestone in the Health Board's commitment to sustainable transport. Paul Reid, Head of Transport and Travel for NHS GGC, said, "The delivery of these new e-vehicles is a great moment for the NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. The e-Volvo trucks will be used to transport laundry between our hospital sites and the Health Board's central laundry unit in Hillington, Glasgow, while the new smart cars will replace a range of existing pool cars that are used in a number of roles by our staff. The smart car comes with a range of 260 miles from full charge, which will help staff carry out community-based patient care in a zero-emissions car." The significance of this latest procurement by NHS GGC cannot be underestimated, and as well as being a considerable financial investment, it represents a huge step forward in our sustainable transport goals. The latest arrival of electric vehicles is part of a wider 5-year climate change and sustainability strategy, which was officially launched last month. The strategy, which was endorsed by the Board of NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde last month, sets out in detail its plans to tackle the climate emergency. The strategy will be reviewed every 5 years, so that it can evolve to reflect NHS GGC's progress and changing national and international priorities. It sets out a range of objectives covering all areas of national policy requirements, with a particular focus on 5 key areas, including transport, fleet energy and transport, waste management, energy, green theatres project, and environmental management. Martin Johnston, Head of Sustainability at NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde, said, "Sustainability is already central to a huge amount of work we do here at NHS GGC, and we have made real strides towards our net zero targets and wider environmental goals. The arrival of these new vehicles is one of the clearest demonstrations yet of the Health Board's commitment to sustainability and net zero in transport and in services across NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde." That article was written by Kirsty Feerick. This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday, the 23rd of October, 2023, from the Lifestyle section. Romania rescue escapes death twice, thanks to Glasgow couple. This article is written by Kirsty Feerick. An adorable pup rescued from death in Romania needed his life saved a second time when he was struck down by a deadly rare disease. Flynn, a crossbreed, was on the verge of being put down after he was found roaming the streets in Bucharest with no one to take him in. Luckily, a kind-hearted couple from Glasgow spotted his photo on a dog rescue charity's website and fell for him immediately. Kira McCormack and Conor McGovern had been settling him into his new domesticated life when he then sadly became seriously ill. He stopped eating and seemed unsettled and lethargic, then began shaking uncontrollably and drooling. As Flynn's condition visibly worsened, he was rushed to the vet's now 24-hour pet emergency hospital in Charing Cross, Glasgow. They diagnosed 3-year-old Flynn with life-threatening Addison's disease, a rare condition caused by a lack of steroids in the body. Kira said, "It was really distressing to see Flynn so ill, especially when you think of everything he must have been through as a stray in Romania, when street dogs end up being put down because there's no home for them, and then starting a new life here in Scotland. We adopted him in March last year, and it took a while, obviously, for him to adjust, given the totally different surroundings. Then this happened in August, just when it felt like he had really settled. We could see it was very serious, and if we hadn't got him help straight away, like we did, then we would have lost him, which is just an unbearable thought. Since he came into our lives, he's been a part of our family and has brought us so much joy. We just couldn't imagine life without him. We can't thank Vets Now enough for looking after Flynn. We were so anxious, but they did a really good job of keeping us updated with multiple phone calls each day." Deputy Lead Emergency Vet at Vets Now Glasgow, Nicole Laws, who led Flynn's care, said, "Flynn really was very poorly indeed when he came in. His sodium level was the lowest I've ever seen in 20 years of practice. Flynn was a lovely patient and very affectionate, and quickly became a favourite with all the team. Seeing him bounce back and ready to go home brought great joy to us all, especially given his background as a rescue dog. Kira and Connor did completely the right thing seeking help so promptly. Every minute matters in an emergency situation like this, and if they delayed by even a few hours, then we may well have been looking at a very different outcome indeed. Flynn is now back to his normal high spirits, giving not one but two paws every time he's asked, and chasing after squirrels in the park." Kira said, "He's just full of energy and brilliant fun to be around. To look at him now, you'd think that nothing had ever happened." Vets Now Hospital Glasgow serves as a crucial referral and emergency hospital, providing specialised care when pets need it most. Available 24/7, the dedicated team of experienced veterinarians and support staff ensures the highest level of care and expertise for every patient. That article was written by Kirsty Fearick. This is from the Glasgow Times on Monday, the 23rd of October, 2023, from the Lifestyle section. Glasgow Crime Stories. The story of the jeweller behind Glasgow's crime world. This article is written by Norman Sylvester. It was a 19th century American writer, Mark Twain, who coined the saying, "Behind every successful man, there is a woman." In the world of Glasgow's criminal underworld, Margaret McGraw fitted that phrase perfectly. For more than 40 years, she was the wife and confidant of one of Scotland's most feared gangsters. Tam McGraw was said to have amassed a personal fortune of £30 million through his criminal activities over a 40-year period. However, his wife's shrewd business brain had allowed him to turn the proceeds into lucrative assets through legitimate ventures such as taxi firms, security companies, and property investments in Glasgow, Ireland, and Spain. It meant he was always one step ahead of the police and the authorities. Tam had been born in Lennoxtown, Stirlingshire, in 1952, before moving to Glasgow's tough Ballanach. It was there he met a young, fresh-faced Margaret, and the two 15-year-olds immediately clicked. 3 years later, the couple wed at a Glasgow registry office in 1971. They then moved down to London to escape the growing police attention, and both found work on the buses and in factories. It was while in London that McGraw was said to have learned how to break past security alarms and into safes. McGraw then returned to Glasgow, where he set up the notorious Ballanach team, who carried out a series of post office robberies across Scotland, using McGraw's newfound skills. All the members lived or came from that one Glasgow housing estate, including a male member of Margaret's family. There were also break-ins to off-sales, warehouses and shops, with high-value thefts of anything from sweets to whisky. Margaret would always make sure McGraw had taken off his clothes before he entered the house, so they could be washed or destroyed to remove any traces of evidence. In the early 1980s, McGraw, on the advice of Margaret, began to focus on other interests, including ice cream vans, which were an increasingly lucrative business in Glasgow's sprawling housing estates. The vans could legitimately make £200 profit a week, £700 now, selling food, soft drinks, sweets and cigarettes on top of the traditional cones and wafers. However, for criminals, they also provided a means for selling stolen goods, drugs and laundering money. In the early 1980s, the couple became embroiled in the city's notorious ice cream wars. The conflict between traders had resulted in a series of assaults, shootings and vehicles being vandalised. It culminated in the murder of six members of the Doyle family in 1984, when their home was deliberately set on fire. The blaze was started after 18-year-old van driver Andrew Doyle refused to give in to the intimidation. Former Balarnock team members Thomas T.C. Campbell and Joe Steele were convicted of starting the fire and jailed for life. Both men spent almost 20 years in prison until they were freed by the appeal courts in 2002. It's been claimed over the years that McGraw was responsible for ordering the hit on the Doyle flat. Though questioned about the murders by police, he never stood trial. In the mid-1980s, the McGraws opened the Caravel Bar in Hall Hill Road in Balarnock. It was put in Margaret's name and she ran it on a day-to-day basis, turning it into a successful money-spinning venture. During this period, the McGraws moved from their council flat in Burnett Road in Balarnock to a luxury bungalow in Mount Vernon. By now, McGraw had entered the city's growing drugs trade, alongside other criminals such as Arthur Thompson Jr., son of crime godfather Arthur Thompson Sr. In 1985, young Arthur was charged with dealing heroin and sentenced to 11 years, which left the field clear for McGraw and others. 6 years later, in August 1991, Arthur Jr., then 31, was shot dead outside his home while on a weekend training for freedom leave from prison. A month later, two suspects for his murder, Joe Hanlon, 23, and Bobby Glover, 31, were found dead in Hanlon's car outside the Cottage Bar in Shettleston. It was the same day as the funeral of young Arthur, and seen as revenge by his father for his son's murder. Tam was blamed by some for their deaths, even though Hanlon had worked for Margaret in the Caravel. It was even claimed that the dead bodies of Hanlon and Glover were stored there before being returned to the car. The following year, Arthur Thompson Sr. died from a heart attack at his home, leaving the way open for McGraw to become the main man. It was around this time that he earned the nickname The Licensee. To some, that was a reference to the Caravel Bar that Margaret ran on his behalf. To others, it meant he had a license to commit crime by the police in return for information on other lawbreakers. In his criminal career, McGraw rarely stood trial, and when he did, he was usually cleared or the charges dropped. The police have always denied there was a deal, but McGraw did seem to lead a charmed life. Many also put it down to Margaret's brains and her ability to keep him one step ahead of the law. She also had her own nickname, the Jeweller, because of her love of bling, though no one would ever dare say that to her face. In 1996, the Caravel had ceased trading and was bulldozed to the ground. It was also claimed that the demolition was to hide any forensic evidence of Bobby and Joe 5 years earlier. However, Margaret maintained that the decision to close the doors was a simple business transaction. The couple sold the land to a development company to make way for 22 homes. By the early 2000s, cracks, however, began to appear in McGraw's criminal empire and marriage to Margaret. in a six-month period between September 2002 and March 2003, two of his most trusted associates, Gordon Ross, 37, and Billy McPhee, 38, were murdered. Around this time, McGraw and his wife separated, said to be over his drinking. He decided to take measures to improve his looks and had Botox sessions and his teeth fixed, and the pair were reunited. McGraw even agreed with a suggestion by Margaret that a book could be written about him to counter the claims about him by gangland rivals in their biographies. The gangster died aged 55 in Glasgow Royal Infirmary in July 2007 after collapsing at his home in Mount Vernon from a heart attack. In 2009, Margaret married a friend of her husband, ironically the son of a former police officer, at Bothwell Bridge Hotel in Lanarkshire. They honeymooned in the Caribbean, but the marriage ended in 2012. In a rare interview in 2012, to promote a book about her life, she spoke about Tam for the first time and how she became aware of his impending death and that of Ross and McPhee through her love of tarot card readings. She added, "I knew Tam was going to have a heart attack which would kill him. It was only a matter of time, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it. I feel Tam here with me now." He is probably listening to us and saying to himself, "That's Margaret talking about me." The book also gave a humorous insight into the relationship the McGraws enjoyed with the police in the early days. It told of how one police officer asked Margaret, who was working in an ice cream van, if she would go to a local off-sales to buy him some drink for a leaving party they were planning later that evening. Because he was in uniform, he was unable to enter the premises to buy alcohol. Margaret told of how she was driven by another cop in an unmarked police car to the off-sales to make the purchase. A further tragedy was to follow in 2013, when the McGraw's son, William, died from drug and alcohol intoxication. 4 years later, it was revealed that Margaret had sold off the McGraw's taxi firm interests for £1.4 million. She passed away at the age of 66 in 2018 from cancer, more than 10 years after the death of her gangster husband. Margaret left behind a multi-million pound family fortune, and to this day, it remains a mystery where it all ended up. One underworld source said at the time, "Tam McGraw never did anything in his criminal career without consulting Margaret. While he may have been a king of crime in Glasgow, she was definitely the power behind the throne." That article was written by Norman Sylvester.
From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 24th of October, from the news section, "Glasgow carers accused of assaulting and laughing at resident," article by Conor Gordon. "Two carers are accused of preventing an elderly patient from getting help. Bisola Akindin, 34, and Diana Otubohu, 39, allegedly neglected the woman, 87, at Glasgow's East Bank care home in October 2022. Court papers state they wrapped the cord of the nurse call alarm around the alarm box, which put it out of her reach. It is alleged that they moved her bed away from the wall, which prevented her from reaching the nurse call alarm. Akindin of Paisley is stated to have repeatedly ignored the resident's request for assistance and left her alone while she was naked. Otubohu of Glasgow Spring Boyd, meanwhile, is claimed to have climbed onto furniture and ignore or refuse her shouts for help and request for assistance to use a commode. Otubohu is further stated to have climbed onto a bed over the woman and removed the entire nurse call system from the wall. Both carers are claimed to have put her at risk of injury and prevented her from summoning assistance. The charges are also aggravated by prejudice related to disability. The pair face a further charge of assaulting the resident at the care home on October 5th, 2022. They are stated to have repeatedly seized hold of her and pulled her arms. Otubohu also allegedly seized hold of her legs and pulled her from the bed, which caused her to fall.
the duo are lastly claimed to have behaved in a threatening or abusive manner towards her. The charge says they shouted, acted in an aggressive manner, gestured aggressively, laughed and danced while the woman was distressed and required assistance. Akinden and Otubohu pleaded not guilty to the charges at Glasgow Sheriff Court. A trial has been set for February next year by Sheriff Owen Mullen. And that report was by Conor Gordon. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 24th of October. From the news section, Glasgow venues close as museum workers strike, article by Drew Sandilands. The Borough Collection and Kelvin Grove Art Gallery and Museums are close today as strike action by museum workers continues. Unison members have walked out for 5 days over planned job cuts, with 38 roles at risk. Picket lines were formed outside the two venues, and Glasgow Life, which runs culture and leisure services for the council, has taken the decision to shut the buildings. Glasgow Museums Resource Centre, which, along with Kelvin Grove Museum, was also closed on Monday, is shut on Tuesday too. A spokesperson for Glasgow Life said venues will be assessed daily before decisions on closures are made. They are anticipating ongoing disruption throughout the week. Brian Smith, Unison Glasgow Secretary, said, "The strike is very well supported and the impact is clear. These workers are taking a stand to defend both themselves and the city's world-class museums. Unison calls on Glasgow City Council's political leaders to intervene and provide the funding required to resolve this dispute. Union members are also planning to protest outside a council meeting on Thursday morning. They voted to walk out due to plans to cut £1.5 million in the Museums and Collection Service. Curators, conservators, outreach assistants, digital photographers and technicians are among the roles affected. Glasgow Life has said it needs to make more than £7 million worth of savings after the council cut its service fee when setting a budget earlier this year. The spokesperson said, "Due to strike action by Unison, Kelvin Grove Art Gallery and Museum, the Borough Collection and Glasgow Museums Resource Centre will be closed to the public today. We will post further updates on our website and social media channels, and our museums will reopen as normal on Saturday, October the 28th. We apologise for any inconvenience this may cause." Glasgow Life previously said the planned cuts, which were approved by the council, are a direct consequence of the continued pressures on public sector finances. It added the savings add up to around 9% of our annual service fee from the council and ensure none of our facilities will have to close. Wherever possible, we have identified ways of making services by reducing, rather than losing, Glasgow Life services, programmes and events, retaining the potential to rebuild them in the future. Unison has held protests at museums in recent months and, in a paper sent to all Glasgow councillors, warned the cuts would be both incredibly irresponsible and a high-profile accident waiting to happen. And that article was by Drew Sandilands. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 24th of October, from the news section, man found to be three times over drink drive limit in Barrhead. Article by Jacob Nicol. A man has been arrested for an alleged drink driving offence after being stopped by traffic cops in Barrhead. Officers reportedly detected a smell of alcohol in the suspect during the incident in Glasgow Road on the morning of Monday, October 23rd. It is claimed he was found to be three times over the drink drive limit following a roadside breath test. He was taken into custody and the report will be sent to the Procurator Fiscal. A police spokesperson said, "In the morning of October 23rd, officers stopped a car in Glasgow Road, Barrhead. Detecting a smell of alcohol on the accused, he was breathalysed and found to be over three times the drink drive limit. He was arrested and will be reported to the Procurator Fiscal." And that article was by Jacob Nicol. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 24th of October, from the news section, man in court after guns and ammunition found in Glasgow home. article by a court reporter. A man has appeared in court charged with firearms offences after guns and ammunition were found at a property in Glasgow. Salvatore Lupi, 38, appeared at Glasgow Sheriff Court but did not enter a plea. He was arrested and charged after a significant amount of guns and ammunition were seized at a property in Maryhill, Glasgow on Friday. Officers from Police Scotland's Organised Crime and Counter-Terrorism Unit, OCCTU, executed a search warrant at a property in Bainview Street, Maryhill, around 12:55pm on Friday. During the search, firearms and a quantity of ammunition were recovered. Lupi was charged with three offences under the Firearms Act and one of misuse of drugs. He did not enter a plea and was remanded in custody. That article was by our court reporter.
Evening Times, October 25. Opinion. Susan Aiken, leader of Glasgow City Council, says, "We must fight Tory decision to force people into homelessness." Compassion and empathy have long been Scotland's values when it comes to welcoming asylum seekers and refugees. Nowhere has that been more evident than in Glasgow. For more than 20 years, our communities have hosted many thousands of asylum seekers and refugees, Congolese, Tamil, Kurdish, Eritrean, Afghan, Iranian, Syrian, Ukrainian, and many more. Many have stayed and are Glaswegian now, becoming our friends, neighbours and colleagues. I am very proud that two of my SNP colleagues on the council come from refugee communities, Councillor Abdul Bostani and Rosa Salih. It is no small part down to the contribution of those refugee communities that Glasgow is the vibrant, diverse and truly global city that we know today. Although we have become a beacon of integration, we have done so in spite of the blatantly cruel policies of successive Westminster governments, Labour as well as Tory. The latest planned assault on the human rights of asylum seekers and refugees might be their worst yet. Due to UK government incompetence, many have waited years for their asylum claims to be processed. Now, to clear the huge backlog it has allowed to build up, the Home Office plans to mass process thousands of claims across the UK, including around 2,500 in Glasgow alone, over the coming weeks. Of course, we want people to get positive decisions, but appallingly, the Tories intend to make those people homeless by throwing them out of their asylum accommodation en masse. The City Council will then have to find places to live for potentially thousands of people in the space of weeks. Even worse, many will find their asylum applications refused, and because we are prevented by a law put in place by Tony Blair's Labour government from providing them with any support whatsoever, they could be forced into destitution and onto the streets. This is an appalling and entirely unnecessary way to treat people. The UK government could allow them to remain in their accommodation until a home is sourced for them. That is what we want them to do, and is certainly what we would do if we were in control of asylum accommodation in the city. But the Tories privatised asylum accommodation, and now, for electoral purposes, Suella Braverman wants to clear asylum seekers from the hotels in the south of England, where Tory voters are, and dump them in Glasgow and across the UK, leaving councils to pick up the pieces of shattered and traumatised lives without a single extra penny of help. And because Glasgow is the biggest asylum authority in the UK by some distance, we will be hit harder than anywhere else. Glasgow's history shows that it's more than possible to support the integration of asylum seekers into their new communities. But the Tories don't want that. For them, asylum seekers are just weapons in the right-wing culture war. They don't care about the damage they'll cause to people's lives or to public services. But Glaswegians care and know that it is utterly unacceptable to force people into homelessness. It is unconscionable to deliberately create a humanitarian crisis. It must be stopped. The SNP city administration will do all we can to fight this. And with disaster and destitution looming for so many, we urge Glaswegians, especially those with a voice and influence, to stand with us, says Susan Aiken, leader of Glasgow City Council.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Q and Review and to tell your friends about our service.